Michael Pento from Pento Portfolio Strategies. Welcome to the Competent Investor. Thanks for joining me.
Thanks for having me on, Tom.
So, Michael, we're speaking here on the afternoon of November 10th, right after the FOMC meeting. Rates were cut by another 25 basis points, and it was announced that they'll be doing $40 billion worth of U.S. Treasury purchases in the next 30 days to aid liquidity. So, one of the other parts of the meeting that was kind of notable was that there were two officials that wanted no cut at all. Do any of these decisions surprise you, or should we be paying attention to the markets and data more than what the Fed is up to?
Well, there was one governor, Governor Miron or Moron, what you, I don't know, forgot, I don't know how to pronounce it, who wanted 50 basis points, a 50 basis point cut. So the Powell's cut 75 basis points the last three meetings. Now, I want you to know that, yes, correct. Don't, it's not monetary policy, he said. This is nothing new in monetary policy, but we're going back into QE, $40 billion a month. And we cut three times. And he says the economy's doing great. Unemployment's really not that much of a problem. And, asset bubbles that are record highs. We've missed our target. We've missed our target to the north for almost 5 years now. It's 4 3/4 years that we missed our target. But we not only have to cut rates again, but we have to start QE. I mean, this is unbelievable. It's monetary malfeasance is what I call it. And he's proved himself one of the worst counterfeiters the history is of history of the Federal Reserve. And there's not any justification for him to be cutting rates at all. But why? I mean, who kicked Tom? Part of free market capitalism is you have booms, you have busts. We have bear markets and we have bull markets. We have excess debt that's taken on, and then that excess debt has to be purged and worked out. That's capitalism. So you could say, well, we have a tool, a monetary tool. We can print money and we can manipulate interest rates and we can alleviate any recessions or any bear markets. We can expunge them from history. But then when you in the process, you've wiped out the middle class. I mean, is it any wonder how does anybody ever wonder why people can't afford a house anymore?
Well,
Is it any wonder why?
now we have 50-year mortgages, so everybody can afford
Oh
it.
yeah. You rent your house forever. That's a great solution. People can't afford pay their taxes. They can't afford health insurance. Middle class has been wiped out. The bottom 80% has been in a recession for 2 years. And the answer is let's just give Wall Street more money to gamble with. So yeah, there's a lot to talk about with these three dissenters, two Oglesby, and I forgot the other guy name. I think it's I forgot his name, but though they get a lot of credit, but this other governor who wants 50 basis points, there's no credit, there's no credibility. Listen, if people lose their jobs, it's a bad thing. I get it, but sometimes you have to have a minor tremor to avoid a major catastrophic earthquake, and that's how markets function. And these people have abrogated markets so long that we no longer have a viable middle class in this country.
Well, yeah, it certainly destroyed the middle class, but we haven't had any, moment of discomfort for many years here. But Michael, we've spoken before about the possible collapse of the bond market. How does this move by the Fed build confidence within the debt markets here?
Well, when you say we haven't had it, well, maybe you haven't and I haven't, but you talk to the bottom 80%, the bottom four quintiles. That's one of the reasons why you see every election is going against unfortunately, it's going against the Republicans because I'm a libertarian, but the Republicans refuse to acknowledge the catastrophic condition that people have to make ends meet. They're having a hard time, living without borrowing more money. And that's where that's the salient problem that faces this country. And by trying to perpetuate asset bubbles and never have a recession and never have a bear market, you've just exacerbated the problem. So I just wanted to clarify that. But go ahead.
Yeah, I mean a moment of discomfort within the markets, right? Obviously,
Oh, yeah.
the Main Street experience is far different.
Well, we had a moment of discomfort about 3 weeks ago, and then when Wall Street thought there wouldn't be another rate cut in December, Well, did you miss the fact that Bitcoin dropped like 30% in a matter of a few weeks, and everything went to a correlation of one, including silver and gold and platinum, and this market started to crash, and then we all of a sudden, I think it was it the who was it that came out? Williams, Governor Williams came out and said, "Hey, we're having a rate cut in December," and the markets turned around. And now we see the markets turned around again because they were spinning their wheels today because we now have $40 billion per month QE. We just don't call it QE.
Yeah, 40 billion, not QE.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, Michael, you've pointed out before that Bitcoin seems to be very tied to liquidity now. So would you then expect Bitcoin to go on a big run from here because of this, return to not QE?
Yeah. I hate Bitcoin. I hate cryptocurrencies. They have very marginal utility. Wall Street has bastardized their existence because their only real cachet was that, hey, it's a decentralized way of transferring money. But then Wall Street comes in and everybody has to know your name and they have to know where you live and they have to know your KYC, know your customer. And they're subject to AML laws. So guess what? If you buy Bitcoin in an ETF, everybody knows who you are and they could confiscate it. So it loses all of its cachet and utility. But having said all that, yeah, I mean, can the price go higher? Absolutely. And this liquidity does support cryptocurrencies, at least in the short term. That doesn't
So,
mean I'm going to buy them. I can buy other things, but I mean, I like to buy things that have real value. I mean, why if Bitcoin, which is now at, what, like $96,000 for 64, your private key, which is a bunch of letters and numbers. I mean, it's like a passcode. If I'm going to pay $96,000 for that, I have to ask myself, is there something unique about this situation? And when there's an unlimited number of cryptocurrencies and blockchains that have been created, the answer is a resounding no. Okay, no, it's not gold. It's not precious. It's not indestructible. So, and it's not money. But yeah, you can make money from it, and this might be one of those times.
So, Michael, does this setup continue this stagflationary environment, or is it possible that we get a deflationary event sparked by the narrowing concentration of the markets here?
Well, you know what? The end carry trade is under a lot of pressure. That's putting a lot of pressure on markets. Rising Japanese government JGBs, Japanese government bond yields, they're pushing up yields across the country, across the globe. The reverse repo facility is now done. It's essentially zero. Bank reserves were dwindling. I think lost like $1.3 trillion in reserves over the past few years. Of course, this is what the Fed is trying to do. They're trying to save banks. That's what they're in existence for. The level of the real Fed funds rate has been positive for about 2.5 years. That's always spelled disaster in the last few business cycles. And of course, there were cracks developing in this all important AI trade, where you see credit default swaps on stocks like Oracle were just spiking to highs we haven't seen in many years. So yeah, there's two da the two dangers I see are number are thus. Number one, the 40 billion QE and this one rate cut that we just got isn't enough to overcome all those things I just mentioned, those six things that I just mentioned. And we still have at least a truncated period where everything goes through a correlation of one and everything gets flushed down the toilet. Until the Fed comes back and says, okay, yeah, we have to cut aggressively and amp up our QE. That's not going to happen right away. That might take a week or two. And stocks are so overvalued now that that week could be a 30% loss in your portfolio. And the other danger that I see out there is that, well, hey, we have these massive debt and deficits. We know that. And then this inflationary impulse that's just been released by the Federal Reserve is enough to unmoor the long end of the yield curve. So they're going to be buying $40 billion a month of short-term debt. The yield curve rises, short-term debt falls, long-term debt rises, and that's where corporate debt is priced off of, mortgages are priced off of that, student loans, auto loans. So that might be enough to create a credit crisis and a problem in the economy and market. So I'm watching those two things. Neither one of those things is the case right now. So we're net long in our portfolio in our long short strategy. It's called the inflation deflation economic cycle strategy. But we're monitoring the situation very closely because this is a very, very difficult balancing act that the Fed is doing.
Yeah, absolutely. It seems like they're in such a precarious position. But how do you think the bond market reacts in a situation where the Fed needs to come in and, try to save the market? Does the bond market, hamstring their efforts in the case that in the next case that that happens?
It well, it depends what they do. They do some kind of like a operation twist where they're buying a long-term debt and selling short-term debt. Do they just start cutting interest rates on the short end of the yield curve just in the money markets? It depends what they do. I think we're gonna have a big problem with the long end of the bond market. Listen, if we have 3% growth, GDP growth, and 3% inflation, which is what we have, Tom. That's 6% nominal GDP. There isn't any reason on God's good earth that we should have 4% 10-year note. It should be closer to 6, if not higher. So that's where I think it's going. Unless you can tell me that inflation is going to 2, growth's going back to 2, and I'll say, well, 10-year is going to stay where it is. That's your best case scenario. But what if inflation continues to stay where it is or even goes higher because of what the Fed's doing? And what if our debt and deficits continue to skyrocket intractably? What if we have a recession and the deficit goes to $6 trillion per annum, which is where it's going to go because of automatic stabilizers that kick in when you have a recession? Think unemployment insurance and food stamps and that much. So that the those happens those things happen automatically, and the deficit expands dramatically. And then who's going to buy all that debt? Is the Fed going to print it all? And what does that do to the dollar? What does that do to inflation? These are all things that are shooting very. Listen, we have three gigantic bubbles that have never existed before concurrently. We have an equity bubble, we have a real estate bubble, and we have a debt bubble. And you have this AI bubble who's adding, corporate debt is now, we used to be buying these chips from Nvidia, were done with cash flow from corporations. And now they're being, now it's all debt. It's debt financed. And we already have a record high corporate debt to GDP ratio. So taking on all this debt, all this leverage is not going to make things, operate more smoothly. It's just adding more fuel to the credit bubble. And all these things are going to reconcile. They're going to probably reconcile concurrently, and it's going to be a disaster. It's just getting the timing right because, when the stock market valuation is 230% of the underlying GDP, you got a real problem. Unsustainable. And that ratio never reconciled in history, where you saw the stock market stay where it was for a decade or more and GDP catch up. And the same can be said with home prices. Home prices never stayed where they were while incomes caught up. It's usually where the asset prices will plunge. And that's what I think is going to happen again.
You mentioned your inflation, deflation, and economic cycle model, Michael, and that tracks liquidity signals. Is it showing stress in liquidity over this last, let's say, month?
It
And is
did.
that possible, possibly
It
what the
did.
Fed is reacting to?
It did. Well, yeah. See, here's the thing, Tom. So my model was so good that it picked up the before Thanksgiving. It said there's a problem in the credit markets. And that's when I was about 40% long equities. I went to 15% long equities, which is where I am still am today. And then what happened with Williams saying we're gonna have a Fed rate cut and this QE round that I think might be enough. I run my model every day, so I'll see if how it does, with the liquidity impulse. But I would assume that that's gonna be the case. We'll have a strong enough liquidity impulse for a while that will placate markets. But how long does that last? I mean, it's not gonna last for very long. I think we have a huge problem coming in 2026. There's a big gap between this last cut in December, we just had one today, as we talked about, and the Fed. So the new Fed chair comes on May 15th. The first meeting is June 17th. So let's just say it's Kevin Hassett. So we have a big yawning gap between the next meeting, the next time that you have a new Fed chair and his first meeting. And Powell indicated we might get one cut between now and then. So yeah, I wouldn't just say we have no problems with liquidity and then Kevin Hassett comes in and takes interest rates to 2%. I'm not gonna go on vacation between now and then. And I don't think your listeners should either. Because although I said that about the yen carry trade and all the reserve problems and the bank reserves, those are real issues that really have to do with liquidity. The real, the positive Fed funds rate, which is still the case today, at least the way they measure it, and that measurement has been consistent for decades. So you can't say, well, inflation's higher. Well, it was higher every other time we had this comparison. So that ratio between the Fed's funds rate, nominal and real. I mean, we've always had a problem every time it was in positive territory for over 2 years. And this has been the case today. So yeah, I remain cautious. I remain on high alert, but still long.
Michael, do you think that because of all of these mounting debt problems, which obviously the rest of the world also is somewhat experiencing, do you think that's the reason that, much of the East is buying and building gold reserves?
Yeah, I mean, one of the reasons that they're doing is because they don't want to have their currency reserves confiscated, so arbitrarily and capriciously from their point of view. So if they're gonna go through all the trouble of making things and then selling them to us and then getting dollars and then taking those dollars and parking them in treasuries, and then government can come and say, okay, you no longer have a currency reserve with us. It's now ours. We've confiscated. That's happened before, and the salient fear is that's going to happen again. So instead of doing that, they'll take their excess, their trade surplus. They'll take those dollars, sell them, buy gold, and keep it themselves. So the dollar is losing its place as the world's reserve currency, and it's being supplanted by to a great extent by gold.
Do you see a scenario where the Treasury revalues gold to current, at very least, current market price during the remainder of Trump's term?
Who cares? I mean, the private market does it. I mean, who cares what the who? What does it make? I don't understand. Maybe I'm missing something. Who cares what the Treasury says? Oh, we have all this gold. Okay, well, they have the gold. I don't care what they market at a penny or $6,000 an ounce. It doesn't bother me at all. They have the gold. So, oh, supposedly have the gold, I'll say. They supposedly have the gold. That's what they say. But that doesn't change. It doesn't change the fact. Either they have it or they don't. And they can value it whatever they want. It
But
doesn't. It doesn't. It doesn't eliminate debt and deficits. I
yeah.
mean, I think the theory is if they say we're going to revalue the gold and then sell the gold. I mean, that's the theory. Well, that would be a different story. But let's see if they do that. Let's see what the dollar U.S. dollar does if they dump. If the Treasury dumps the gold that they say they have, let's see what the dollar does, and let's see what inflation does. I don't think it would be very pretty for Americans, for us Americans.
So gold miners are up over 125% around there over the last year, Michael. Do you think that it's possible that they become more of a beneficiary of institutional money when they see that performance of the sector?
Well, that would be great. Don't forget also their costs. Not only is their product gaining value, but also the cost to mine the gold, the energy that it takes to get it out of the ground is going down. So it's a win-win for these gold miners. So as long as the metal stays in the primary bull market, they should do fine. And that'll tr attract, it's already attracted individual investors and institutional investors as well. As well as you just mentioned, global central banks. And Tom, I just want to say, I don't come across as a hard-hearted person. Listen, it's okay if we have a recession. It's not the end of the world. What causes an existential crisis to occur is when you think that you have the hubris and arrogance to believe that you can subvert free markets forever. And that's the real problem. And we're going to have to face that inevitability. These asset bubbles have to pop, and And I believe it's going to happen through inexorable stagflation. That's what I call it, inexorable stagflation. That's where we're headed.
Well, I think that's the fear, though, isn't it, Michael? That if we do have any type of correction, because that can has been kicked so far down the road, that all of that leverage within the system really starts to come apart very, very quickly because those rebalancing events haven't occurred for so long.
Well, it's exactly. Maybe you put it better than me, Tom. I mean, we had a small amount of reserves in the system for many, many, many years, and then the reserves went to $3.4 trillion, post GFC, post COVID. Then they fall down to, they drop to maybe like high twos. I don't have the exact number in my head, and that's an existential crisis for the banking system. So now you have Powell for when we have full employment, asset bubbles at a record high, missed their target for almost 5 years up to the north of inflation, and we're sitting there staring at each other saying, why are they cutting interest rates and why are they doing QE? And the answer is because reserves in the system were getting scarce, and God forbid we had any problem at all in the banking system, because the you're not see when you have when the tectonic plates of the economy are allowed to move, you get minor tremors. But when you put pins in place that keep the tectonic plates from moving for many, many decades, when you have when you remove those pins, you don't have a minor tremor. You have a catastrophic earthquake. That's the analogy I like to use, and that's exactly where we are. We can't have a recession anymore because a recession or disinflation turns into a devastating depression because of how disfigured and deformed asset bubbles have become. That's the truth.
Yeah, that's a good analogy for the amount of stress that has built up within the system, and I don't think there's a smooth resolution to that.
No, this is what happened to, like, I think it was Renovo Partners, this private credit thing that, they value their assets at 100 cents on the dollar, and a few weeks later, there was zero. And that's a big one, just one example of the private credit market, which was basically nothing a few years ago, 14, 15 years ago, and now it's $1.7 trillion of private credit. It's just one example, and you can go to all kinds of corporate debt, junk bonds, student debt, credit card debt, the national debt. These are all, part and parcel of the massive credit bubble. And you just can't have it burst because it would, like you said, it wouldn't burst gracefully and innocuously. It would be devastating.
So, Michael, in a liquidity crunch situation like that, does everything get wiped out, especially, considering that leverage that we've been talking about within the
Everything,
markets
Tom.
and the system?
Tom, everything. Everything goes. A good example was like the week before Thanksgiving. Recently, everything went to R squared one. So cryptocurrencies got wiped out. Gold got wiped out. Silver, precious metals, platinum, stocks, everything. Even bonds went down. Everything went to a correlation of one. There was no safe haven to be found. Bitcoin, like, it was the worst. Supposed to be something that, an alternative asset. It's just a reflection of the liquidity in the system. And when liquidity dries up, that's why I have something called the four horsemen of the economic apocalypse. The dollar rises. Cash is a great repository, short-term treasuries, and you have to short the market. If you do those four things, and for those four things only, you'll survive and thrive the next collapse that we have of the next deflation, credit crisis, depression. Those are the only four things that'll work. And it's going to happen quickly. I can't tell you, I can't give you a date right now, but the model was so good that I created, it had us out of that short little hiccup, and now we're going to slowly scale back in to where we were long before, most likely, if my model signifies that this 40 billion not QE is going to be enough to reliquify the markets for a while. But as I said, there's a big that big yawning gap between now and June, where you have one rate cut. Maybe that's not enough to offset those liquidity problems that we already have. Already have it in place.
Unless we get a hashtag emergency meeting, right?
Yeah, I mean, if they had, Tom, if they have an emergency meeting, then market's already down 20, 30%. It's too late.
Michael, silver moved through $60 announced this week. What do you see as being the main driver for this price action? And is it possible that we see, maybe another major spike coming because of the inability of exchanges to deliver physical metal? Or are you do you look at silver just more mainly from a technical and non-emotional standpoint?
I've been in and out of silver. I'm long gold. I'm long platinum. I'm long precious metals, and happily so for many, many, many years. I'm gonna stay that way until I see that liquidity event. That's when I sold some silver into that liquidity event. Now I have to buy it back. But there's no reason. I can't tell you all of the reasons right now. You talk about falling real interest rates would be one of them. Okay. That Fed's cutting and inflation's rising. That's a definition of falling real interest rates. And it's the end of the dollar reserve system that we've put in place since Bretton Woods, 1944. So there's many reasons why you want to own precious metals. Now you could argue about you want to own more silver than gold, you want to own platinum and gold, or all three, platinum, gold, and silver. Maybe you can throw copper in there as a base metal. You can decide for yourself, but you have to own these metals, in my opinion, right now.
So is there a core position of, let's say, physical that you hang on to, and then you
Yes.
trade defensively over and above on top of that
I
with your four
always
horsemen?
recommend, even during the four horsemen of the economic apocalypses, that you always have 5% of your net worth in physical gold. That's my recommendation. That's something that, that's something you give your kids and your grandkids. That's a legacy for you and your family. And then I toggle the investable, which what I call liquid paper gold, because it's very highly liquid, but it's just paper. It's not real gold. You don't hold it. It's the same thing as owning Bitcoin then. I mean, it's like I want to own gold because I don't trust the dollar. I don't trust the government. I don't trust the financial system. Well, why would I buy an ETF that's supposedly or even worse, store it in a vault overseas? Or own it, put it in an IRA, a gold IRA. These things make no sense to me whatsoever. You own gold because you don't like the currency and you don't like the government and you don't trust the government to keep your purchasing power of the dollar intact. So you have to have it in your physical possession. And I toggle what I call liquid paper gold between 0 and 20%, depending on the economic situation. And we haven't solved it, Tom. I know we're supposedly taking in trillions of dollars, but the deficit for 25, fiscal 25, which ended in October, was 1.8 trillion, which is basically the same as it was in the prior year. So, I mean, that means that we're adding to the debt 1.8 trillion. We're not paying down the debt. We're not even attenuating the amount of red ink. So let's just hope we do something about it in fiscal 26. But I'm hearing things about $1,000 checks for kids and $2,000 checks for. I mean, I'm hearing the same things that put us in the situation in the first place, and even making it worse.
No, but Michael, that money is all coming from tariff revenue.
Yeah, I heard that. I mean, tariff revenue was woefully inadequate to give. I think it was hundreds of billions of dollars away from the goal of giving everybody $2,000 into their, not every everybody makes under $100,000 a year. And then a lot of the tariffs are being reversed, right? So I thought the tariff revenue was going to be used to pay off the deficit and then start paying down the debt. That's not the case.
Seems like there's many moving targets in this administration.
Yeah. Well, I mean, and I voted for Donald Trump. I'm mostly a supporter of him, but that doesn't mean that I believe when he says that we're taking in trillions of dollars, and he says that the Federal Reserve should be cutting interest rates, slashing interest rates. I don't, if this is the greatest economy, an A plus 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 economy, I think we don't need an emergency 50 basis point, a series of 50 basis point rate cuts, and to go back into QE. That doesn't make any sense to me. And it shouldn't make sense to anybody.
It doesn't make sense. I mean, when as you were explaining earlier, this thought came to mind, and it doesn't make sense to be cutting and going back to not QE when the market's at all-time highs either.
Financial conditions are very easy. We have housing that's unaffordable. We have asset bubbles all over the place, and we have a massive credit bubble. Why are we encouraging more borrowing? And why are we pushing up asset bubbles more? Why are we getting more inflation? This is inflation that's directly steered toward Wall Street. We already have an I-shaped economy, as my friend Adam Taggart says, where we have the bottom 80% are going into the toilet, and we have that one dot that's rising
Good
above
way to put it.
that top 20%. Why do we want to exacerbate that trenchant gap between the have and have nots? But that's what we're doing.
It doesn't make
Unfortunately.
sense from a productivity standpoint either, right? For the
Doesn't make
country.
sense from any standpoint. I mean, you have to have a working, viable, healthy middle class, or you don't have a country. Because those are the people that actually work. That do the work.
Michael, is there anything other than explosion of debt and credit within the country that you see as a big risk going into this next year here?
The most salient risk I see is a some kind of chaos in the bond market. It's long overdue. So inflation and insolvencies are a catalyst for bond market chaos, and that's what I see happening. And I don't know. I can't give you a date, but it's going to happen. There's no It's unavoidable to happen. So that's what you have to monitor.
Excellent. Well, I know we're coming up against time here, Michael. Is there anything else that you'd like to leave our listeners to consider before we do?
I would say if you're not with an active manager with a vibrant and robust model that can move you in and out of these cycles when you need to be, then your retirement is in jeopardy. So find somebody that can and is willing to short the market when it needs to be short, or at least move you out of these high beta assets when you see a recession or a credit crisis happening, because you have time now, but your time's running out.
Of course, for anybody that wants to read more of Michael's work, that's all available at pentoport.com, and of course on X as well at Michael Pento. Michael, thanks so much for your time today. Always a pleasure to speak with you.
Great to see you again, Tom.